Welcome to For the Love of Jewelers, a podcast brought to you by Rio Grande Jewelry Supply and hosted by yours truly, Courtney Gray. Now in our third season, we celebrate the unconditional strength driven by our passion to create and the motivating factors that enable us to adapt. We recognize the relevance and resilience of the jewelry industry through inspirational stories that challenge and honor its makers. Our journey, although uncharted, is one we are on together. Let's pause, share, and discover the variety of silver linings gained from each personal story of innovation and determination. Kendria Thompson is a self-guided metalsmith, lapidarist, and illustrator who has always had a yearning to create things, especially with her hands. Her journey into the jewelry world began as a child, but more so in her early adult years when she wanted to fix her costume jewelry. She was able to take broken parts and make them new again. Kendria's illustration career is newly started, and she has enjoyed illustrating other artists' work for them so they might have creative ways to advertise. She is also the founder of Metalsmiths for Change, a safe space where artists work towards a common goal: to stand in solidarity with the Black community by advocating for racial and social justice through their artwork. Her jewelry line can be found at solidtreasures.com. Welcome to For the Love of Jewelers, Kendria. It's great to have you. There's so much I want to talk with you about. I'm excited to share with our community what you're doing presently, as well as your future goals. So let's just start at the beginning. Tell us, how'd you get started and why jewelry?
Why jewelry? Let's see. That's a deep question. So I've always loved arts, anything that you can put your hands on, especially, and also graphic design. I went to college after high school for graphic design for a short period of time. But then I became discouraged, to be honest, because the graphic design field it's hard to get in it and actually, you know, make a sustainable living. So I started to do jewelry making because my costume jewelry started falling apart. And I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to buy new ones and I really love this. I'm going to fix it. So I began fixing beaded jewelry and made a bunch of wire pieces. And at the time I was working at Ruby Tuesday. And so I sold to my coworkers there. And from then, that was around 2012. And from then I was like, okay, I can make this a business and actually become legal. So I got Solid Treasures LLC then in 2012 and my website. And I just quickly from there realized that this is meant for me because I could sit at home and do it. And I don't have to, because I'm very introverted. So I don't have to go out and talk to people or do all that stuff. But it was really nice at the time to be able to figure out what I can do for myself and not rely on another company to, you know, pay me. And I love doing it too. So, and seeing the people's faces when they receive it, oftentimes they love it more than me. I'm like, wow, you love my work. That's awesome. So I say on my website, I'm like, selling is the icing on the cake because you get to have other people enjoy your work.
So are you able to work full time now?
Well, I would consider myself part time because I have about an hour throughout every day to work if that's what I want to dedicate my time towards. About an hour solid time because I have a 2-year-old and that nap time is precious.
Yeah, because you have two small children, right, Kendria?
Yeah, I have a 2-year-old and a 7-year-old. She's in school, so that's a nice, yeah.
How has this changed your world?
Well, my daughter, she's 7. She says that when she gets older, she wants to become a boss of Solid Treasures first. Cool girl, okay. And then she wants to, and I believe she's inspired by my entrepreneurship. So she wants to be a construction worker so that she can build her own building and work there. I was like, she got a plan and I love it. I'm like, this 7-year-old got it going on. Okay. But having little kids and having a business at home is very hard. I can't even sugarcoat it. It's hard. You have like oftentimes she does like to come and help. And I love that. I always welcome her to help make things. Like, I'll give her a scrap piece of metal and I'll give her a hammer. And this sounds really dangerous when I say it out loud. But I'll give her that. And then she hammers stuff, and I'll give her a stamp, and I'll help hold her stamp so she doesn't hammer her finger, because I believe we've probably all done that and it hurts. So I hold the stamp and she holds the hammer, and she'll like stamp her name on something and make it into something. And it's fun. And my 2-year-old, he just came down there for the first time maybe a couple months ago, and I gave him the same thing. I gave him some sheet metal and a hammer to texture with, and he loved it. He loves that loud sound and banging it on the anvil. It was nice.
Have fun for them.
Yeah.
And you. And I hear you too, Kendria. I think everybody out there who's a parent can relate to that 1 hour or a few hours a day, maybe, that you get to focus where they're sleeping, they're at school. It's not so easy, and it takes a lot of discipline. I think one thing I learned from that was how to be really efficient with my time. Can you relate to that?
So I'll mention my ADHD now. So being an artist with ADHD, I only got diagnosed earlier this year. I suspected it for a while, though, but circumstances led me to wanting to be diagnosed and treated however I felt comfortable, which I am not yet. Having ADHD, having to designate my time wisely and do things efficiently, it just doesn't happen yet. Some things I'm okay with, like I've recently figured out that, okay, I am not going to finish a piece of jewelry in a single day anymore. At least not for a while, not till my kids like are both in school, I guess. But I'm not going to be able to finish a piece of jewelry, so I need to stop trying to do that. And so I'll separate my tasks. Like, okay, if I'm down here, I will polish it, or I will sand this piece with my file and get all the file work done today. And then tomorrow I will focus on sanding it through the grits. And then the next day I'll focus on polishing. So all in all, it'll take me like 3 days to complete one piece nowadays, and it's a long time. I'm just really hoping to be able to figure out a way to space out my time properly, space out that hour properly. And so far it's working a little bit, but it would be nice to create more than one piece in 3 days. I need a process. That's why I'm figuring out a process. Like I told you, I started in 2012 with jewelry making. That was just beading. But then in 2015 is when I started metalsmithing, which that's the stuff that takes much more precision and much more time to get it right.
It sounds to me like you're getting there, Kendria. Like you're finding your process that works for you. I think that's impressive. I think when we become parents, it becomes apparent that there are things we must work on so we can understand more about how we operate. And we also have to give ourselves a little grace.
Yeah, it's like mom fog, like the mom fog, the brain fog kicks in with parenting, and then the ADHD, you got that, and then you got your worldly issues, you got that. And yeah, and I think we all crave balance and want it and want to do better for ourselves and people around us, you know?
Yes, especially when you have kiddos. I think you know it's no longer just about you. A system can really help. I remember when I first started my career, my son, my oldest, was 1 year old, and time was very limited. I was still nursing, et cetera. Understanding our process, I think it's the best that we can do. You know, our family has to come first. But I will tell you guys, you can still build. You can still dream. You can still do whatever you're trying to do. Just do it maybe a little less each day.
Oh, yes, of course. It's just about finding that balance. I've seen it done.
So tell us about Solid Treasures. Where did your name come from, Kendria?
Oh, man. It's so hard to think of business names. But when I thought of that one, it just clicked and it stuck forever. I'm just like, okay, this is it. Because at the beginning, so like I told you, I was only doing bead work and some wire work. Honestly, I wasn't that good at wire work. Anybody who has my work out there from 2012, if you need any polishing, go ahead and email me. But it wasn't all that great. But my strive was always to be able to offer my work and it last if it's taken care of. That is an important, important part. If it's taken care of, it should be able to last many lifetimes to come. So solid treasures, I just picture, I want people to be able to dig out my work if ever we are in a, in disaster, and be able to be like, okay, this is a fine piece of jewelry now. Let's just polish it off and keep on going. I want people to be able to just be able to pass down my work to their children. And, you know, I just want it to last forever.
Yes, the permanence of well-made jewelry, as you said, like a natural disaster could bury it in the earth for centuries to come and then be dug up by future generations or the aliens or whomever. I can totally relate to that, Kendria. That's what I personally love about metal is the permanence of it, the strength and the longevity of the material.
Yes. When I started metalworking more, I was like, my name fits even better because So when I first started, I used to make rings out of the ring bands out of, I believe, 20 gauge metal, which was really thin, in my opinion. So I upped it to 16 gauge, and that's like my standard now, 16 gauge. And so it's really solid, and everything is just so solid about my work. So I'm just like, it fits. I just love my business name a lot.
Kendria, I do want to talk to you more about your illustrations in a bit because they're fabulous.
Thank you.
You are so multi-talented and doing all the things to build your line and grow what you offer. I think that's what it takes. Tell me about the open spaces that you leave or the negative space in some of your work. Do you have is there a reason for that?
It's just my style, I think. The negative space was mainly for inlay purposes. And playing around with that.
Yeah, your inlay work stood out to me. Are you getting some time to get in and cut stone and do the lapidary?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Cutting stones is fun. It is fun. Just seeing that rough material, just rough and, you know, dried out, and then turning it into this beautifully polished, mirror finished piece is sometimes better than jewelry making. Yeah. I can just look at a gemstone all day and just not put it in jewelry. I can just look at it.
I think we can all relate to that, Kendria. I mean, that's why we got into this craft. I think as we like shiny things, tools, and gemstones. And there's so many variations and things that you can do with each that it's endless. It is.
And that's one of the things that drew me the most to jewelry making. So I had played with like crocheting, painting, a little bit of clay work, and all of those are fun, and I still like to do those every now and again. But with jewelry making, it just for some reason seems more endless than any other art medium to me. It's just we can literally form any shape we can and make it beautiful.
Yeah, there's so many techniques umbrellaed underneath this one medium. Like you said, the lapidary, inlay, adding gemstones and different styles, and those are just a few. There's so many applications. I don't think any of us will ever master them in our career. But I really appreciate that diversity and like the room for growth and expansion in this work.
Yeah, I love how you can always learn. Like there's always something to learn about jewelry making. It's not boring. It's not boring at all.
Definitely agree. It's not boring. Pretty endless. Share with us, Kendria, about your vision and your mission for Metalsmiths for Change.
So with Metalsmiths for Change, we advocate, we as in myself and artists who donate their work towards fundraisers and auctions to raise money. We advocate for racial and social justice through collaboration and to provide equitable opportunities for Black artists. So my main goal is to first and foremost become a nonprofit organization. I was able to get the LLC in a hurry last year, but getting a nonprofit organization takes time, you know, to be tax deductible and all that. So that is my main goal. I was able to raise enough funds to be able to pay for that, which was really nice. And so far, the funds that we've raised money for go to organizations who are basically on the ground and out there doing excellent work to try to create a better society and world. And the artists that have donated, a lot of them just keep on coming and donating their work because they know that it's an important thing to do.
Let me ask you this, Kendria. What would be the highest possible outcome for Metalsmiths for Change? For you, what does success look like in this program?
For me, okay, so the main thing I want to work towards is being able to give to Black artists, specifically metalsmiths, so that we can build our community. Because personally, when I search for artists, it's really hard to see a diverse group of artists when I search for metalsmiths. And I'm hoping to be able to give Black artists a bigger spotlight, be able to advertise for them on Metalsmiths for Change, and just help, because it's hard to be seen, because we're seen just when bad things happen in the world, and it's hard to deal with that fact. So I work towards trying to get them seen more than anything else.
I'm very excited to see this community growth in our industry, Kendria.
I'll tell you. So when I had my BLM solidarity lapel pins, and they were a major hit, it was actually the what I consider to be kind of the start of my career, except for, like, I still have to work a lot, so sales don't come to me, so I just want that to be clear. So when I started selling those pins, at first it was overwhelming at the fact that people were only realizing I existed then. I guess what got me in a really great mindset was the fact that the artists who followed me were sending me DMs and emails asking to help get these pins out free of charge. And I was like, oh my God, now that makes me feel good. Like, you have artists who could be spending time doing whatever they can to make money for themselves and to take care of themselves, and you want to help me. I was like, wow, that's amazing. But I only accepted help from two people who were in the area. The help that was offered, I was like, okay, well, you have so many people wanting to help, not knowing what to do, which we're almost all in that position at some point. So I was like, okay, well, let's turn this into some real good stuff, and let's all make jewelry and put it up for auction and make something great out of this. Like, if you're willing to help me, you're willing to help everybody else who needs help. That's how I saw it. So, and they did, and they keep doing it. It was overwhelming, and it's still a little overwhelming. It's relieving that I can see that there are people who are actively trying to make a better world.
I'm excited to hear that everyone's coming together in new ways to support each other and grow. And congratulations to you for building this community and finding a forum to promote your work together and for a good cause.
Yeah, because the first auctions we did were, or the first fundraiser auctions we did, we celebrated the lives of Black men and women and everything in between who were killed by police. That was such a meaningful and thoughtful auction. It brought people to tears. Some of the families actually heard about it, and I cried so much. But some of the families heard about it and loved what we were doing, and that gave me the courage to keep on doing, because I was nervous at first, because making jewelry about people who have passed away, I didn't want to further the pain for their families if they knew what we were doing. But I just felt in my heart that it was the right thing to do, so I kept on doing it. But knowing that there are families out there who knew about what we were doing and are very appreciative of it, that just gave me a push.
That's powerful, Kendria. Do you want to invite people to reach out to you to help and assist you with this community building, or do you still have this overwhelming flood of help?
What I would love is if I could get some Black metalsmiths to help organize things. That would be awesome if I can have about two of them, two, three. However, I need people each month for auctions. That's always needed, like as many people. So I do have to work pretty hard to get people to continuously donate. There are several who already have it in their calendars and booked and ready to go every time. But I do need artists to donate their work, anything.
Yes, this is a big time consuming role and goal, Kendria. And I think it's okay to ask for that help and to receive it.
Yep. That's one thing too, receiving, like when people kept offering their time, I was like, wait, what? I can't see you. Don't you have stuff to do? Being able to receive is harder than giving.
It is a challenge sometimes, isn't it?
That I've learned. I was like, okay.
It's a letting go process.
Mm-hmm. Let go of my control for things. Yeah.
Yeah. And the big learning for me is that we can't do it all alone.
Right. No. Right now, I do have, I've had all this year, I've had Tracy Timmons jewelry. She's helped with spreadsheets, getting me organized behind scenes. She's helped with a lot. She's helped keep my mental state in check sometimes. I had two people, actually, Tracy and Mary Ellen. I'm going to mention them because I love them so much. And if they're listening, I want them to hear their names called. Yeah, I love them. They helped so much. At first, I was organizing everything on my tiny little phone, and I don't know how I did that. My life was chaotic last year when I started Metalsmiths for Change, but it's a lot easier now. So yeah, for right now, I do have one person helping, but it would be so beneficial to have a team going.
Absolutely. And probably a continuous or consistent team would be.
A continuous team who's committed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Instead of having to start over each month, you can mm-hmm. build a team and an energy together.
Each month we have to start over. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Kendria, I wish you all the best with this. And I know we all want to, you know, keep in touch with you and hear about how it's growing and moving and yeah, do it all together.
I hope so.
To me, it's about collaboration over competition.
And that's something that I learned too. So starting off with jewelry making and social media, you feel this sense of competition just because there's other jewelers on here. But then I guess, well, for me, I quickly like didn't feel that because I'm like, well, there's a flood of them on here and I make different work. So, but that feeling is so high for a lot of people, feeling that like it's a competition just being on social media, showing off your work.
Yes, it seems like there's got to be better ways we can all work together. You know, we have very similar goals, so yeah. Collaborate.
Totally.
Kendria, tell us, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, I wanted to be a teacher, specifically an art teacher. I still would love to do that someday. I'm not pushing for that or anything. I'm totally happy being a jeweler for the rest of my life if I can. Yeah, if I can teach one day before COVID, actually. Mind you, I'm self-guided, so I don't really have any formal education in it, but I was going to instruct a beginner's metalsmithing course, but that got canceled. I got all the materials and everything for 8 students, and it got canceled, but that's okay.
Yeah, a lot got canceled. It's such a bummer. Well, you do have it ready when the timing is right again.
Yeah, it's ready. It's ready. I would love to try to do it again because, yeah, I had like a little syllabus and I had it all planned out. It's ready because I've had many people reach out and ask how I've done this technique or this or this. And I'm always happy to share if I have time and the energy to share. That's just up my alley with something that I would love to do.
Love that you answered teacher without hesitation to that question. So Kendria, tell us, was there a significant move or change in your life that led to you becoming a metalsmith?
Well, my husband's job brought us to the West Coast, and I'm not sure if I would have moved on to metalsmithing. Metalsmithing does takes up space. So when I moved and I saw that I was able to have a space for my own art, I don't know. I don't think that I would have been metalsmithing. I never thought about that. I don't think I'd be metalsmithing had I not moved to, at least not as soon as I did, had I not moved to the West Coast from Virginia. We moved to hot Arizona. It was nice there. I like it though. I just don't want to live there. But it was a big difference in what I could do at home. Because back in Virginia, we had a small apartment. It was just me and my husband. Well, we were boyfriend girlfriend at the time. It was just me and my boyfriend, and in our 2-bedroom apartment that didn't have much space for much. And then we moved, thinking family, and I'm like, okay, we need more space. And then that more space looked really nice for art stuff. So, so we had more space and a baby. So that's like the only thing that I feel like moved me this way. My grandma was very artistic. She actually, to this day, she'll take like cardboard things. Like during COVID, cardboard was her art canvas. She would turn cardboard into anything, wall art, anything. And I remember it was actually the first thing I remember actually making. It was, I sewed a plush ball. It was a little plush ball, dual tone. And And she kept it and she still has it to this day. She said, "This is beautiful." I've always thought about that and it's always encouraged me. I'm like, "Oh, it's pretty." Like, it wasn't the best volume, like, but she kept it and she loved it and it really meant something to her. So I'm like, "Okay, well, my stuff can mean something to you and it's just this art. I love it."
Yeah, keep creating, evolving and sharing your work with others.
Yeah.
I think when family or customers or even colleagues hold and show their gratitude and love for the objects we make, it's part of what drives us to make more, to create more.
Yeah, gratification is everything. Sometimes. I say gratification is everything, but now I do create for myself. I feel like if I go to the bench and I create for anybody other than myself, I'm not going to feel satisfied with it, which is one of the big reasons why I stopped accepting commissions. I just want to be able to have feelings towards the piece and just love a piece and cherish a piece and not feel like it's somebody else's creation at the bench coming to life. Like, it's mine. I want it to be all mine, if that makes sense. So I definitely create for myself before anybody else. I feel like if I love it, there are definitely going to be other people who love it also. So the decision to cut them off was hard because I didn't get many sales off my website or anything. It was mostly just custom work before last year. Having to make that big decision. Okay, you guys, I know I've been your personal jeweler for this many years, but I'm not doing it anymore. It was a hard decision and it was kind of sad because I did love some of the pieces that I created for some people. Because I created some non-traditional wedding rings, wedding bands, and birthday gifts and anniversary gifts. And I would say that custom work is a lot better than just somebody who just wants a gemstone ring just because the sentimental work is nice. But it's just time consuming sometimes. And
yeah, custom does take a different time investment than when you're just making something to make. You're adjusting to somebody else's vision and style. And I love that you say, "Kendria, I sit down at the bench. It's for me. I'm going to make what I want to make. And somebody is going to love it as much as I do." I'll sometimes, when I'm working, creating for somebody, I'll put a picture of that person I'm designing and creating for in front of me so that I can remember, you know, this is for her. This is for him.
That's really smart. Yeah. Yeah. I scrolled down people's Instagrams. If they contacted me through Instagram, I'm like, okay, what style are you into? Let me see if I could sketch something that you might like.
Yeah. To find their style, personal style. Another big factor in custom design is budget, because custom is more time consuming.
Absolutely.
It's also one of a kind. It's not something that you can mass produce unless, you know, it's a limited edition or something like that. Maybe that's a different pricing tier that you can offer. How did you price your custom work?
How I priced my custom work, it was, so they told me what they wanted and I would sketch out or send them photos, whatever needed to be done to come up with a final design idea. Usually I'd send at a max 3 sketches because that's what time allowed. And I would tell them what the price of the piece was. Now, that didn't account for the mistakes that I would make behind the bench. It didn't account for any of that. It didn't account for broken stones or any of that. And those moments are just awful when that happens. It's like, well, I'm not going to charge you more just because I messed up on your piece. That didn't feel right to me. For some people, I know they give their quote or price after their piece is done or get half deposit, whatever. Yeah, I didn't. And it's just a set price and it is what it is at the end of the day, and they are always happy. The time and energy that it takes to get to that finish line of a custom piece is a lot.
So instead you're going to focus on your line and your Black Lives Matters lapel pins. By the way, the new turquoise inlay pins look amazing.
Thank you. I love the inlay. The inlay work is so fun because I get to get on the lapidary wheels and change it up a bit.
So are you still selling the BLM pens and producing them as you were?
Oh yeah. I actually told the public that I'll be selling the pens for as long as I feel a need for them to be out there, which is probably going to be a very long time. Cause for now I do have them casted so that they're easier to get out. So I don't have to spend time producing them. anymore. But and now they just, I do a polish on them and send it out.
So yes, let's talk about production process for just a minute. This is a big hurdle for so many makers. Have it cast, right? Have a mold made and cast.
Yeah, I've encouraged so many people since I've learned about it to get your work cast if you feel like it's beneficial for your business. I get it clipped and shipped, which basically means that you get it clipped right off the sprue or whatever it is, and she doesn't do the polishing or tumbling, and it costs less at the end of the day, just a little less. And I get to get these duplicated pieces, and it cuts down on the time tremendously. And each piece is still, I consider each piece still one of a kind because I work them at the end of the day and it's one of a kind work. I encourage anybody, if you have the means to get casted work, do it. Especially, I found that if I get like small item cast, little pendants, for example, it's basically a moneymaker. Like I said earlier, and that money does not come to me easily, but I still have to advertise for it. And if I don't send out an email or post, I'm not getting any traffic at all on my website. That's just how it is. I don't know why yet, but hopefully it changes soon. Definitely look into casting.
It sounds like casting and production has been a really smart move for you and a big time saver. What have you learned on that journey?
What I've learned. So the lapel pins, it was a headache last year. When I started getting a flood of orders in, I was like, okay, I'm going to start sewing now. And so I got through maybe, I think, 20 or 30 pins that I made before like my body was done. It was done. It was absolutely done. And so I was like, okay, casting. I looked into laser cutting and I was like, okay, I can just like laser cut, buy this laser cutter, solder it and do that. Then I was like, no. I'm like, okay, casting. Casting's the only option that I have for this right now. My original piece was too thin in some areas. I had to work the piece again and figure out which areas of the piece needed to be thicker. Yeah, I made the whole thing thicker, just the whole thing thicker. The ones that are on the website right now are actually 3D printed first. My good friend Nick, he had them printed for me so that they can be as thick as I wanted them and to the specs that I wanted them. Hopefully that never gets anybody in the mindset of it's not handmade, because the original one was, and I can still make it handmade, but that 3D printing really helped make things very specific to what I need and didn't waste my time having to keep on doing that trial and error.
It is a trial and error. I think that is commonly misunderstood. I used to teach casting and the students would come in, some would come in and have the idea that their first carving would be their master model. And though I admired that ambition, I would remind them that this is a learning process like anything. And we first need to understand hollow out and how to keep the weight down for production costs, make sure things are thick enough, but still create a solid treasure like yours. There's a lot of trial and error in the beginning, but once you have that model right, then you can make your mold and produce this piece hundreds or thousands of times.
Yep, exactly. Then you're talking production, and that's what I like. that's a lot better. When I was making the rings from the Fiasayo collection, the ones that are have negative space in it, I thought about that a lot. I was like, okay, well, the more I cut out on this ring, the less the casting is going to be, and that's a thought. And it makes for a better design too, in my opinion. The rings, I was wanting them, like I talked about earlier, how solid treasures. I like my work to be solid and durable. When you sit on it, I don't want it to break. And so I made these in 14 gauge metal, so I can send it into casting and have them turn out to be 16 gauge. And right now, I believe it turned out to be 17 gauge, which is, to me, is a big difference, but you have to account for that when you're getting cast, because how much you're gonna file away at the metal and all that stuff too.
Yes, indeed. And shrinkage from the casting itself, then you have more shrinkage once you mold the piece, and then recasting, more shrinkage. So, and then yes, like you said, clean up and polish, you're removing more material. So it is smart of you to go with a 14 gauge to start. Making sure everything's at least 1 millimeter thick when you cast, for sure.
And the key with that is I did a 14 gauge brass, so I didn't have to waste silver. So I sent her my brass casting. Those were my molds.
So what is next for you, Kendria, and for your line, Solid Treasures?
I really want to try engraving. First, I want to try hand engraving. I'm not going to get all the fancy magnification yet, but until I feel like I'm good and I'll actually dive into it. But I really want to try engraving because I have a lot of ideas that I would like to execute.
Oh, yes. Engraving. I could see your work really blossoming with some hand engraved patterns, especially considering you're an illustrator. So drawing on the metal makes absolute sense. That's very exciting. Good luck. Kendria, it's been such a pleasure to get to know you, to hear more about all the things that you have in the works and your family. Is there anything that you'd like to share with the community before we say goodbye today?
Yeah, don't get discouraged. It's super easy to get discouraged because I have like group chats, and I used to be a part of more group chats in the previous years when we've tried to kind of beat the Instagram algorithm and try to support each other more. But now it's just like, oh, well, the algorithm sucks, so whatever. But like, we are getting very discouraged at like the numbers and all that. And I know people will have assumptions about me selling easily just because I have a big following on Instagram, when it's like, that's not the case. Everybody has to put in effort. It doesn't come to you easily. And to think that way, it's just incorrect, I guess.
So how did you build your Instagram social media following?
I would say when I first started, it was easier to grow on Instagram. That's just it. Like using hashtags, I utilize hashtags a lot. And Instagram was kind of my second job being on there and trying to find customers and all that stuff. So in the beginning, I spent a lot of time trying to find customers on Instagram. And I think that's what the following came from, just spending too much time on Instagram. Well, we can justify it because it's part of our business, but it's still a lot of time, you know? And I would love to like not spend any time on social media. I actually wanted to push more, and I push other people to get a newsletter. I think that's so important to try to get your newsletter up, because if you rely on social media and your account gets deleted one day, who are you going to talk to? Get a newsletter. Tell people. And what I started off doing was on Instagram, I just said like, hey, if you want email newsletter updates, you can get special things from it. You can get a discount from it. If you sign up, just go ahead and give me your email address and I'll add it on a list. It's easy growing now. Now I have over 1,000 subscribers to my email newsletter, which is a lot. It's like a different platform kind of, and you don't rely on social media so much, and it's nice.
Kendria, where can everybody find you on Instagram and otherwise?
On Instagram, you can find me at Solid Treasures, Metalsmiths for Change, and Virgo Inclinations.
Kendria, thank you so much for sharing your insight and your journey with us today on For the Love of Jewelers. I want to say onward and upward to you in all your endeavors. You guys take a minute, please, or longer, and check out Metalsmiths for Change. Get involved if it's a good fit for you, and if you have the time or the work to dedicate, I know Kendria would appreciate it. And also solidtreasures.com. And to all of you, onward and upward. Thanks again, Kendria.
Yay, thank you. I appreciate you, Courtney.
Thanks for tuning in, you guys. I hope you have enjoyed this episode of For the Love of Jewelers. Stay tuned for the next episode by subscribing through Spotify, iTunes, or by searching podcast at riogrande.com. I encourage you to rate us, write a review, and share with friends and colleagues. I hope you are all finding ways to stay inspired. I'm your host, Courtney Gray. Until we get to connect again, onward and upward.